Hello, welcome to The Signal. I'm Amy Fesk.
And I'm Meg Campbell. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
Today we're bringing you stories from around Halifax, live here on CKDU 88.1 FM.
You can listen to our show anytime on Spotify, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. We are The Signal, a Halifax podcast.
Today on the show, homeless couture.
I don't know why anybody would want to be paying that much money to look like a homeless person. When I am paying no money to be looking like that.
We'll hear about a fashion trend that takes inspiration from the streets.
And individuals aren't the only ones struggling with food inflation.
After a while, there are certain things that I just can't buy anymore.
How food banks are facing financial challenges as well.
Plus, later, the what I eat in a day trend is more than just snapshots of someone's diet.
It could really easily like trigger somebody or, you know, just be that little bit it needs to send somebody into a spiral.
What some see as food inspiration, others have to avoid.
All that and more on today's show, but first.
This week was the 6-month anniversary of the Tantallon wildfires, but residents say nothing has been done to prevent further catastrophes. I visited the area to see why that is.
That's not good right there, and looked at the smoke and knew what was happening.
Dustin O'Leary stands at the window of his Westwood Hills home, recalling the night it was almost destroyed. The blackened debris from May's forest fire has been cleared, but his worries about the next fire season still smolder. He's the president of the Residents Association. He's spearheading the fight to build an emergency exit from the bottlenecked development.
I'm still personally galled that it has taken this long and that we're still not there. So, I mean, as much as I want to be positive that it's moving forward, it should have been done a lot sooner than this.
There are only two roads accessing the development from Hammonds Plains Road and no way out of the top of the subdivision. O'Leary says that means the same conditions exist for another catastrophe.
It takes a calamity to spur action, unfortunately.
Pam Lovelace is the councillor for the area. She's called for changes for almost 3 years.
First motion at council kickstarts this process to actually build community connector roads so that we're not sending everybody onto one corridor, which is exactly what happened with this wildfire.
Like O'Leary, Lovelace has worried about how climate change poses a threat to people in the area.
We knew that the potential for disaster and lack of evacuation planning for the entire high-risk wildfire area was a significant concern, and we knew that HRM was not prepared.
It's a matter of who owns the land where the egress will go. Other subdivisions in the area are on municipal land and now have new exit roads. But for Westwood Hills, the province is the landowner.
Still in a position where the provincial government does not recognize secondary exits or emergency exits as essential for community safety.
Lovelace and O'Leary both agree the provincial government is playing a high-stakes waiting game that could be devastating for families in Westwood Hills come the next fire season.
Thanks for that story, Amy.
You're very welcome.
Picture distressed, mud-washed jeans, beat-up sneakers, or blood-stained pants. Now imagine an $18,000 price tag on these items. Warren Da Silva tells us how these international design houses, like Balenciaga, are imitating what homeless people wear for profit.
Just off Spring Garden Road, Richmond is a store that sells luxury fashion. In-house stylist Pierre Umali is looking over the new Fall-Winter 2023 collection.
Yeah, like I do see like a lot of brands kind of going into that direction, that pre-distressed, pre-dirty. And I personally think it's cool. Those acne jeans, a lot of people have been asking for it.
Kanye popularized distressed hoodies, a trend that is growing from there. Some say it's disrespectful to poor people.
I wouldn't say that he's mocking the homeless people. Like the hoodies, for example, they're treated a certain way with a chemical on it that like will distress over time.
A few blocks away at the homeless encampment at Victoria Park, people are huddled in their tents, trying to stay dry and warm. Angela Jean is wearing some old pajamas. She's taken aback at pictures of distressed hoodies and shoes.
Okay. Oh my God, homeless couture, but oh, this is for the rich people. It seems really kind of inappropriate, to be honest. $1,580. I mean, I'm living the homeless experience, so, you know, this is how your clothes and your shoes end up. So who would want, you know, that?
Robin Tupi walks towards her tent. Her clothes are ripped and worn. She's also disappointed by the photos.
I don't know why anybody would want to be paying that much money to look like a homeless person when I am paying no money to be looking like that.
Over at Soul Harbor Mission, Cindy Doe volunteers her time helping homeless people stay off the streets and find clothes to keep them warm.
I think it's ridiculous. Spending $13,000 on a jacket.
She's most upset by high fashion pants with simulated urine or blood stains as a selling feature.
Talking to people who have been stabbed and have experienced violence on the streets, they don't want to do that. It's like for them, that's a danger to their lives. But why is it all of a sudden seen as this like glamorous thing?
Back at Victoria Park, Angela is sheltering from the rain. She watches a young woman in fashionably ripped jeans walk by and shakes her head.
To be honest, right now, I'm just freezing.
For The Signal, I'm Warren De Silva in Halifax.
We shine the light on whatever's worst. Perfection is a disease of a nation. Pretty hurts. We shine the light on whatever's worst. Try to fix something.
With the challenge of inflation, shopping for food can be really tricky. Even food banks are finding it difficult to make sure there's enough to go around. Sarah Drysdale has more.
Everybody needs groceries, but as inflation has increased prices, shopping is a little bit harder now, even for those who have the means to buy their groceries without assistance. Rod Winters is picking up some groceries at his local Sobeys. He says he has to think more carefully about what he buys.
And I'm buying smaller portions and more individual meals and picking and choosing, being more choosy about what I buy.
It can be even harder for those who need a little bit of extra help financially. Michael O'Brien is the food bank coordinator at Brunswick Street Mission. He says they're struggling too to provide food to those who need it.
After a while, there are certain things that I just can't buy anymore.
Among those are staple items like eggs, milk, and meat. They're in high demand at the food banks. Brunswick Street Mission gets food from Feed Nova Scotia to distribute. But this year, with inflation, there's less to go around.
In fact, I've heard from other food banks that say trying to get lots of eggs and milk is one of their biggest challenges. Mm. It's a big challenge for us because eggs are just really high price.
Other items always in demand include personal care products, juice, and coffee. He says protein shakes are very helpful as well. He says they're very nutritious for the elderly and those who don't have homes. He hopes for more donations of those items.
If we get, as the things that I've talked about, the really expensive things, like I mentioned, the things we can't get, like coffee and hygiene products, and the things that are the most expensive for us to get, like protein bars and protein drinks, it helps relieve a lot of the load in terms of what we can and can't spend on, and it really helps out the community that comes to us.
If you're able to donate to a local food bank, here are a few things O'Brien says are always appreciated. Soap, toothbrushes and toothpaste, juice, coffee, and cereal. Non-perishables are always a good option, too. He says there can never be too many of them. For The Signal, I'm Sarah Drysdale in Halifax.
If you'd like to make a food donation for the holidays, here's your chance. Feed Nova Scotia is holding its annual Stuff a Bus event. If you can't make it, you can always head to your local grocery store and find their donation bin.
You're listening to The Signal on CKDU, 88.1 FM in Halifax.
We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
You can also hear us on Spotify, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. Just search The Signal, a Halifax podcast. I'm Meg Campbell.
And I'm Amy Fisk. Still to come on the show, a little sex education.
And if the unpacking happens while packing your butt, why not?
We'll hear about a workshop focused on your bum.
And funding is not the only issue women entrepreneurs face.
If you don't have connections, if you don't have a community that supports you, it will be very hard for you.
We'll hear how women are coming together to help women-owned businesses grow.
Yeah. Here's another full day of eating of a guy who's in college and is just trying to get huge.
They're everywhere these days. The videos and photos on social media under the banner What I Eat in a Day. It's a phenomenon that some people are worried about. Raisa Alibi has been looking into this. She's here to tell us about the impact of this trend. Hi, Raisa.
Hi, Meg.
Raisa, tell me about what these What I Eat in a Day videos really are.
Well, if you search the hashtag What I Eat in a Day on Instagram, 1 million posts will appear. They're all snapshots, sometimes a video or a slide of images that document what someone supposedly eats in a day. But they're not just on Instagram, they're on TikTok too. Here are some examples.
Is what I eat in a day creating healthy, balanced recipes?
What I eat in a day on an aggressive cut, 1,400 calories, I do not advise anybody eating like
this. This is what I eat in a day as a 19-year-old model.
What I eat in a day as a Parisian guy. For the breakfast, I get my baguette with salted butter and a cup of coffee.
And anybody can make these posts.
Can you talk to me about the impact of these videos?
When we watch how other people are structuring their meals, it's easy to start to compare ourselves and our own eating habits to someone else's. I spoke with Kyla Fox. She's a clinical therapist and the founder of an eating disorder treatment center in Toronto. She worries about people trying to look like the people they see posing online.
I think when we watch someone that we're, that we're influenced by and we see what they're eating in a day, we then feel that we should be like them and eat what they eat and do what they do so we can look like them, live like them, be who they are, which in essence means that we can't and shouldn't be us. And so this is really dangerous when it comes to the ways that it can lead people to engage in harmful behaviors with food and body around restriction, which ultimately leads to binging, purging in some way, shape, or form, and the vicious cycle of eating disorder and disordered eating patterns.
How authentic are these videos and images?
We can't really know, but a lot of this content gives the illusion that every meal is planned. Because of that, these posts often do not account for spontaneity. I met with Deborah Wells-Hopi. She's the program's manager of Eating Disorders Nova Scotia. Here's her take.
How often do you see a what I eat in a day that includes, oh, I dropped by my family's house and there was some leftover cake and I had a piece of that? It just doesn't. It's in that way, it's very restrictive. And that is a diet. And diets are the number one precursor to an eating disorder. Eating disorders occur after there has been a period of restricting food for whatever reason of restriction. The more times we restrict our food, the more likely we are to develop an intense eating disorder.
And Meg, eating disorders are considered a mental illness. They can affect anyone. And Deborah Wells-Hopi told me that when they do, they are all consuming.
You can't separate the eating disorder from the individual in any aspect of your life. It's not something that you can dabble in and keep isolated from the other parts of your life for very long. Maybe at the beginning that can be the case, but ultimately it will affect your relationships, your work, your academics, your ability to experience joy.
Did you talk to anyone with an eating disorder about how they feel about this video trend?
I spoke with Lauren Best. She's 38. She's struggled with an eating disorder since she was 13. Even though she tries not to seek out any of this content on social media, sometimes it pops up.
When you're struggling, I don't think they're like good to watch. Nobody needs to see what you're eating in a day if you're not like having a good day. It could really easily like trigger somebody or, you know, just be that little bit it needs to send somebody into a spiral.
What specifically is it about struggling with an eating disorder that makes seeing these posts so risky?
Well, recovering from an eating disorder is hard. It involves breaking down old patterns, eating patterns, and thought patterns. Kyla Fox, the therapist at the Toronto Eating Disorder Treatment Center, walked me through this reality.
I think that when you have an eating disorder or when you're recovering from one, there are certain things that that each individual would need to be doing with respect to food in order to be safe and live away from their rules and rituals that are harming them. And so when you watch someone who's showing you what they eat in a day, those patterns may actively reflect eating disordered patterns.
But Meg, developing a meal plan based on what someone else eats does not mean two bodies will look the same. I spoke with Shelley Bakardax this week. She's a dietitian here in Halifax. She says our size, activity levels, age, genetics, and more all determine what we need to eat. If I'm 5'2", I don't need to eat the same food as a 200-pound athlete.
Seems like these videos are everywhere. Is there anything we can do to help ourselves navigate this kind of content?
There is, and Fox has some advice.
Part of living a really healthy and safe life and having a safe relationship with our body and with food is about finding what you need, what works for you. And that's really, really different than what works for anybody else.
Struggling with an eating disorder can be extremely isolating, but you are never alone. If you or a loved one is looking for support, please contact Eating Disorders Nova Scotia at info@eatingdisordersns.ca.
Thanks, Raisa. It's probably not something your sex ed teacher talked about, or your parents either, but this week at a Halifax sex shop and bookstore, the topic was, wait for it, anal sex.
No way, tell me more.
It was promoted as a sex-positive workshop at Venus Envy on Barrington Street. It's one of their occasional workshops. A small group of people was there, including one married couple looking for something a little different. And it all started with some toys.
It's almost like, oh, I'm relaxing to it. And because this is smooth, it's not causing friction while I do it.
Mina Doe is a sex worker and a pleasure coach. Her workshop is called Love the Butthole. It encourages people to get more in touch with their bodies by paying attention to the back end of things. Kat and Alex Mullally are married. They came looking for inspiration.
I'd say as a married couple, we're always trying to spice things up. It was pretty interesting, and I definitely think I learned more. I would say that I got something out of the workshop, and I'm happy and I'm becoming more open for sure.
I wouldn't say we're at the advanced level, but we're just getting better at the basics.
Over the 2 hours, Doe displayed sex toys, taught various ways to clean the anus, and suggested positions for sexual pleasure. Rochelle Manette works as a sex educator at Venus Envy. She says these workshops provide more in-depth sex education than may have been offered in schools or at home.
None of us got really good comprehensive sex education. I think that it's important to close a lot of the gaps that exist around our knowledge about sex, but also our willingness to talk about sex. But the idea is to get people talking and get people asking the questions that they have.
And people did talk, did ask questions, and they laughed a lot. Mina Doe hopes all participants leave her workshop feeling less hesitant or fearful about sex.
Sexuality is a huge world, right? Huge topic. And definitely a place, a site of oppression for a lot of people. And if the unpacking happens while packing your butt, why not? It's just another avenue opportunity to do so.
An opportunity, she says, to reduce the stigma around anal sex.
Helping it to relax, despite me stimulating that sphincter muscle.
Meg, thanks for getting to the bottom of that. Up next, according to a 2023 study, only 18% of Canadian businesses are women-owned. From lack of funding to limited networks, women entrepreneurs face many challenges. But some professionals are trying to change that. Noor Hafid tells us more.
It's a typical morning for Rita Ramaz. She's pouring a cup of mint tea for her first customer, as music from her home country plays in the background of her little shop on Novalee Drive. Ramaz opened Novalee Kitchen and Market last year. Today, between regular orders and catering, business is steady. But things haven't always been easy.
From my own experience,
I find women always face more challenge.
A recent study shows that the number of women-owned businesses in Canada is growing, but women continue to face significant barriers, such as lack of funding. Men have access to 2.5 times more financing than women, and funding is just the first step.
It doesn't matter if you have money, if you don't have connections, if you don't have a community that supports you, it will be very hard for you.
That's Tawana Moraes. She's with the YWCA. She manages their women entrepreneurship programs. They teach essential business skills to women who have a business or want to start one.
It's a lot of understanding and being able to identify what are my strengths as an entrepreneur and connecting those strengths to the needs of the market.
Back at Novalee Kitchen, Ramaz is trying to empower other women entrepreneurs too. She rents her kitchen to women who want to start a business.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Keisha Carter is one of those women. She started Comfort Foodies, a pop-up food business open Friday through Sunday at Novalee Kitchen.
Working here, it took a lot of stress off of me because, you know, being able to, you know, work with Rita, and she's kind of like a mentor for me. Any questions that I have, I can ask her. You know what I mean? We help each other a lot, which is great, you know, two women kind of coming together.
And that mentoring gives Carter the confidence to keep going, despite the challenges. For The Signal, I'm Noor Hafid.
The YWCA host information sessions about their women entrepreneurship programs. The next session is happening this Tuesday at noon.
What's up, Halifax? There's a lot going on this weekend as we get into December. Christmas season is right around the corner, and the festivities have already begun.
This weekend features Christmas concerts and Christmas movies aplenty, along with a creative climate pop-up and the home opener for the Thunderbirds.
Right, that's tomorrow. For all the lacrosse fans out there, the Thunderbirds take off at 8 p.m. at the Scotiabank Center.
I hear those games are really exciting. I know I'll be there.
If that doesn't catch your interest, Juno Award-winning singer-songwriter Megan Smith is performing a concert Friday night as well.
Honey, let's play hooky, 'cause it snowed last night.
That's right. She'll be singing songs from her Christmas collection at The Stage at St. Andrews. Doors open at 7:30 p.m.
She's great. I love her. Tickets are $38, and there's still some left.
Well, that covers Friday night. What's up on Saturday?
Saturday afternoon, there's a creative climate pop-up to share ideas and discuss solutions for climate change.
There'll be discussions, workshops, and activities that are fun for all ages. It's at the Everyone Everyday Chibuktuk. Here's one of the organizers.
Yeah, so it's happening in the Everyone Everyday Halifax Chibuktuk on Gottigen Street. So this is a community space that is in partnership with the kind of Mi'kmaq Native Friendship Center. And it's a really cool space if you haven't heard of it.
So if you want to get more involved in the climate change conversation, make sure you stop by between 2 and 5 p.m.
We're going to have a couple fun activities. We're doing something with food. I don't want to spoil it because we haven't put on socials yet. But something related to food. We're going to be doing something related to seeds and growing. And we're going to be doing a really cool cooperative art project. So if you want to find out, definitely come check it out.
That sounds awesome. Did you hear that the Woodlawn Public Library is holding a sensory-friendly showing of Elf Saturday night?
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Those events are great. They turn the volume down and keep the lights dim. It's such a relaxing way to enjoy a movie, especially for people with autism or other sensory sensitivities.
Elf is one of my favorite Christmas movies, too.
And for those of us who might be having a little too much fun this weekend, there's a better way to get home.
That's right. The NSLC launches its holiday campaign to offer free transit services for anyone in the HRM who needs them. That's tomorrow and Saturday night from 6 p.m. till the end of the service night.
So, if you're in Halifax and thinking of driving home after a couple drinks this weekend, just hop on a free bus instead.
Keep it safe.
Maybe your weekend plans include some Christmas shopping. If you're going to Halifax Shopping Center, you might want to leave some extra time. That's because you may struggle to find a place to park. Chloe Hannon has more on that.
Shoppers at the Halifax Shopping Center this week say that parking at the mall is not an easy task. Traffic is rapidly increasing as the holiday season approaches. Visitors are frustrated about the time they spend looking for a spot.
I was going in circles through the parking garage for I don't know how long.
It's hard to get in the parking lot.
It's very difficult when they have construction and they block out the entire back parking spot.
I eventually did find this spot because I was circulating and just waited for someone to leave.
And then people literally have to cross over at Walmart to walk over.
The shopping center has over 2,400 parking spaces. 45 are handicap spaces. A multi-level parkade that was closed for renovations this fall reopened 2 weeks ago, but there were no additional parking spaces added. Taylor Dyke Revels is an employee in one of the stores at the mall.
Always had a hard time finding a parking spot. Usually before the mall opens, if I'm opening, I don't have a hard time, but when the mall is open, usually around my 4 to 9s, I always have a hard time. I usually avoid the parkades because I know that I'll be driving around forever before I find a parking spot.
Tim Stewart is the manager at Sephora in the shopping center. He says aside from the parking problems, it can be a dangerous place to drive, with no signs to direct vehicles and no stop signs.
Black Friday, someone almost smoked me coming out of the parking garage by Sports Check.
Stephanie Schneer is the marketing director for the Halifax Shopping Center. She says they've had calls about the parking issues, but she didn't want to comment, other than to say there should be more than enough parking spaces for everyone. For The Signal, I'm Chloe Hannon in Halifax. Maybe you can drive my car,
and maybe I love you. It was one of Halifax's most iconic music venues. A popular haunt in the early 2000s, it hosted everything from pop punk to thrash metal. Now, the Pavilion is no more. Last week, the city demolished the building. Casey Jordan tells us why the Pavilion was so special and why some local music fans are mourning its loss.
If you're a Halifax music fan, chances are you've heard of the Pavilion. It was once a storage shed on the Halifax Common, but in the late 90s, it became one of the hottest concert venues in the city.
If you were a musician, 9 times out of 10, it's like, what are you doing on the weekend? You would just go to the Pavilion and like hang out, watch bands, play.
Katie Wayne went there as a teenager. She was obsessed with music. Going to shows at the Pavilion, she felt a sense of belonging. She felt cool. Before too long, Katie was on stage playing her own shows.
It was like my playground, my gym. That's just where I learned how to be a musician, how to perform in front of people and find myself as like an artist.
By 2014, money at the Pavilion was tight. The community ran fundraisers to try to keep the doors open. But last year, the city announced it planned to demolish the building. It was making room for the new swimming pool that opened this summer. This was a hard hit to the music community. The Pavilion was one of the few all-ages venues left in Halifax. Maury Chesterfield is with Radstorm, a local arts collective. He says inclusive spaces are important, especially for young people.
It helps people who can't have access to 19 and up shows. It could help inspire them to make their own music.
Last week, the city dealt the final blow. The building that held so many musical memories, now just an empty pit. Katie was there the day the Pavilion fell.
I was feeling like incredibly grateful for my whole experience there, but also I was just trying not to cry because I was so sad about it all.
She remembered how she would nervously tune her guitar, waiting for her turn to play. But once she got on stage, Katie always felt at home.
It was cool. I felt so cool every time I was there. And I don't know if I'll ever feel that cool again.
Now it's up to the next generation of Halifax rockers to find their own Pavilion. For The Signal, I'm KC Jordan in Halifax.
That's our show for today.
If there's anything you want to hear again, go to our website, signalhfx.ca.
Our show was produced this week by Andy Mullins, with associate producer Noor Hafid.
A shout out to our technician, Mark Pinio, in the control room.
Our audio professor is Pauline Dakin. I'm Meg Campbell.
And I'm Amy Fisk. We'll be back next week for our last show of the season.
Thanks for listening.